Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted. From Packers.com, I'm Mike Spofford, alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, let's take a quick look back at last weekend. Before the fiasco on Sunday night, there was quite a ceremony in Canton on Saturday night. Brett Favre's Hall of Fame induction speech, I thought he brought the house down.
Yeah, he really did. And I thought, you know, for someone like yourself that had been working as many long, arduous hours as you had been, I thought it brought out the life in everybody. And then in that stadium, as you said, right around the corner, there were a lot of, adversity.
Yeah, I guess.
But that Saturday night was perfect. And for Favre to come out there, 36 minutes, 14 seconds, I believe it was, it felt like 5 minutes, though, to me. And just listening to him without a script, without a prompter. He obviously, you could tell, had his notes, you know, and mentally knew where he wanted to go with things.
Right.
But for not being a professional speaker, I thought that was one of the most eloquent Hall of Fame speeches you're ever going to hear.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And for all of the, excuse me, all of the very poignant things he said about teammates and coaches and his wife and other family members, the part that we're all going to remember, the part that I'm going to remember, was what he said about his father. And sitting there in the press box in Canton on Saturday night, you know, what occurred to me and what I wrote about for the website right after the speech is that really he gave an on-field tribute to his father on December 22nd, 2003, the night after he died, on that Monday night in Oakland.
Right.
And Saturday night in Canton was the off-field tribute to his father. And you couldn't have done either of them any better.
Two great moments that came out of the Hall of Fame. Arguably, I would put them up against any that we've ever seen on that podium. One, them being able to splice over with Deanna's presentation, being able to incorporate his dad's quotes. Because he said, as he mentioned in the speech, his dad would have been the one who would have presented him if he'd been alive. And it really felt, the way they did it, it felt like he kind of was in a way. And to have both Deanna and Irv being able to present him, I thought was really special. And two, that story he told about how Deanna, in that conversation they had on the plane ride away from the Oakland Raiders game, her saying that, you know, the conversation she had with his dad is that he wanted to see him at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He wanted to be there to present him. And then that was the first moment that Favre started actually thinking about it. It was really emotional because even at that point in 2003, I think you can make an argument he was already cemented into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think Favre was certainly a Hall of Famer by that point, but that speaks to just, you know, how Brett played his career, that he didn't look down the road at things like that. And the other story that really stood out was when he was talking about being in high school and he was kind of hanging out outside his dad's door. His dad was his high school coach. And his dad never heard this or knew about it, but he heard his dad tell the other assistant coaches after kind of a rough game, "My son will redeem himself. He's got it in him. You know, I know my son. He's got this in him." And then, you know, Brett stood up there in front of the whole world and said, "You know, Dad, I spent the rest of my career trying to redeem myself." And if that didn't move some emotion in you, then I don't know what could.
Yeah, I think it got a little dusty everywhere in the United States or viewership of the Hall of Fame ceremony. But one of the things I really enjoyed about that is I think everybody can relate to that, whether, you know, your father is still alive, whether he's passed on like Irv did. Everybody had that moment. And you can tell from you're a father, for him to stand up to all those coaches and say that's a powerful moment, you know, saying, you know, I know my son, I believe in my son. That's not easy to do. And for Favre to hear that, almost kind of like how Irv had told Deanna that he wanted to see him in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it speaks to that sort of pridefulness of things that maybe you won't necessarily share with that other person or with that son or with that father, but it's there in that love and admiration. And I don't know about you, but I texted my dad immediately after that. It had been too long since I talked to him, so it was very powerful.
I would have, Dad, but I was too busy.
Yeah, he was working.
I was working. I was in the press box there. But to hear that from a father who had been notoriously tough on him. I mean, Brett had talked, you know, for years throughout his career about how, you know, anytime his dad gave him any kind of compliment, it was always followed by a "yeah, but." There was always, you know, something. And that's just the way Irv was. And that's the way a lot of fathers slash coaches can be. And really, I thought it was a tremendous finish to a great night of inductions.
And I'm going to paraphrase this, but in the presentation, that quote that Irv had on Favre, I think it was something like, Brett's just something different.
Yeah.
You know, he's just something special. He's different. And it's such a short phrase, but there's so much truth in that. When you look at his career, what he meant to not only the Green Bay Packers, but the National Football League, he was just different. There's nobody else like him. As he said, there might have been better passers. There might have been better throwers. But nobody was Brett Favre. And that's what makes a Hall of Famer a Hall of Famer, somebody who left their own indelible impact on the league and in the game. And Brett Favre certainly did that.
Yeah. Well, some interesting discussions over the weekend as well about who might be the next Packers to potentially go into the Hall of Fame. And we'll discuss those after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, as far as future Hall of Famers from Green Bay, we know Charles Woodson is going in probably in 5 years on the first ballot, I would imagine. We know Aaron Rodgers is going to go in presumably 5 years after he retires. A couple of names that kept coming up in discussions that I was having with some of Favre's former teammates and whatnot in Canton were Leroy Butler and Mike Holmgren. Now, let's take Butler first. In looking at his resume, you might say, 4 all-pro selections, first-team all-pro selections in the 90s. And that means he was one of the top 2 safeties in the league recognized by the media for 4 times in a span of 6 years. I think that's pretty tough to ignore.
I do, too. And you know my thoughts on this already. I've been very clear on that I feel that Leroy should be in, and I think it will happen. I don't know when it's going to be.
Right.
But I think Leroy Butler ends up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame because he
thinks so, too.
He does,
I talked to him. He's very confident it's going to happen at some point. He just doesn't know when.
Yeah, and sometimes there is a weight involved with this. We've seen it. Now, you hope it doesn't become like the Jerry Kramer your entire life kind of weight.
For sure.
Whatever the case may be, when you look at Butler's stats, and I don't have them all in front of me at this very moment, but he stood out, and I've always felt this way. That Super Bowl team, you know, and then they're making it again in 32, they had more than 2 Hall of Fame football players on that squad. At least that's how I felt about it. I just with seeing Fritz Schirmer's scheme and how they were able to go about their business each and every week, he was a catalyst in what they did defensively.
Yeah, If you look at the statistics, the combination that stands out with Leroy Butler is that I believe he had 38 interceptions in his career, and he had 20 and a half sacks.
Yeah.
Now that, from a defensive back, is pretty impressive, and I don't know the numbers on any other defensive backs who have quite that combination, but it speaks to, you know, his usage by Fritz Schirmer as a weapon on defense, whether it was blitzing off the slot, whether it was, you know, covering a slot receiver sometimes, which really gave Schirmer a lot of flexibility in terms of how he deployed that defense. He, aside from Reggie White, obviously at defensive end rushing the passer, Butler was the other guy who was the game changer on what at the time was the best defense in the NFL.
Absolutely. And we're talking about the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the contributions that you made to the game. Leroy Butler did a lot of this when it wasn't, you know, you're going to see these stats pop up now because of the nickel and dime defenses, you know, in corners coming on slot blitzes and things like that. Those things are going to start to tabulate up over the next couple of years. But you have to look at what he did at a time in which a lot of guys weren't doing all of that. And you're right, Fritz Schirmer, his scheme and what they wanted to do defensively was predicated on using Leroy Butler in a multitude of situations, whether it be a game-changing safety and turning over the football, whether it was blitzing him or using him against the run. He could do it all. And I really think, and I think Leroy was 31 or 32, or maybe 33, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but when his career did come to an end, but if he would have had 2 more seasons or put together a second part of a career like Charles Woodson did.
Right,
I don't even think we're having this discussion right now, but because it ended, you know, 12 season in, I think 10 years as a starter, it's going to be up there. But I just think he was an incredibly productive safety, and against some of these other guys that have come up, I don't think you can discount, you know, him being as credible as any of these other safeties that have made the finalists lately.
Yeah, we'll see. Safety has been talked about as an overlooked position in the Hall of Fame,
totally.
And perhaps Butler then will get his due maybe when safeties get their due. Another guy with a strong case, I think, is Mike Holmgren. I looked at his, and I didn't realize this until I was looking at it over the weekend, 17 years as a head coach between Green Bay and Seattle. Only three times in 17 years did a Mike Holmgren team finish worse than 9-7 in the regular season.
Yeah.
Three times in 17 years. Then you add to that he took one franchise to its first Super Bowl in 29 years and then went to a second Super Bowl right after that. And then he took another franchise to its first Super Bowl ever. Now, he only won one of those three Super Bowls, unfortunately for him, but I think it's a pretty strong case that Holmgren gets in someday as well.
I agree. The only thing is that's tough. You see what Mike McCarthy's done here now in his 11th season in Green Bay. A part of me, even though I know Holmgren wanted the personnel decisions, he wanted to have that kind of power, and at that time it didn't look like that was going to be it coming anytime soon.
Right.
You do wonder if he stays in Green Bay, what happens in the years to follow. And I know
Brett Favre talked about that as one of his regrets, yeah, that he didn't have more years with Mike Holmgren.
Yeah, and I think, and I don't want to misquote Favre, but I'm pretty sure he said he thinks they would have at least won another Super Bowl if Holmgren stays in Green Bay.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. He went a different direction. He helped rebuild the Seattle Seahawks. It took time. It really wasn't an overnight turnaround, kind of like it was in Green Bay for him.
Right.
It did take a lot of years and a lot of struggles, but he did get them there with Ted Thompson's help, you know, in the front office.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you have the one Super Bowl. Will that be enough? When you look at his whole career trajectory, what he did in San Francisco as well, it depends on how you all weigh that. But certainly established a career and made an impact that you could see him someday maybe being in that conversation as well.
Yeah. Ron Wolf has lobbied in the past for Leroy Butler. Brett Favre this past weekend lobbied a little bit for Mike Holmgren. I think the race for the most Hall of Famers is kind of interesting here. Chicago Bears with 27, the Green Bay Packers now with Favre with 24. We know that Woodson and Rodgers are going to go in. You know, Butler and Holmgren, we'll see about that. I think the Bears are going to get Devin Hester and Brian Urlacher in. Peanut Tillman, definitely not as strong a slam dunk type of case as Urlacher, but one that will definitely be looked at. So interesting to see how this plays out over the next several years, maybe decades, as to whether the Bears hold on to that spot or if the Packers can close the gap with the most Hall of Famers.
Yeah, and they're certainly going to have some guys here. When you look at some of these guys that played for the Packers recently, that could potentially be in that conversation. You know, KG, Kevin Green even mentioned too, Clay Matthews possibly being a guy someday.
For sure.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, all right. Well, after the break, we'll come back and talk about what happened at the Hall of Fame the night after all of the inductions. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, of course, Sunday night in Canton, the game is canceled due to the conditions of the field, a botched paint job, whatever you want to say. I think the most interesting thing about this is it's a sign of how far the league has come, you might say, in this player safety era, that they really put player safety as paramount over everything else and said, we can't play on this field. I found that to be an interesting statement, and I think the league has evolved very quickly over time to get to this point.
I agree, Spoff, and that was probably the paramount thing that was in my mind throughout that entire night, because if you were like us sitting up in the press box at first, seeing everything down on the field, like all the fans, I know all the fans were like, well, just play on it. You know, the ones that have put in all this money and have traveled down there for this thing.
Yeah.
But when I actually stood on the field, you know, when we were talking to Mark Murphy after the game, or after the cancellation, sorry, I stood on it. And it was like, yeah, me and my buddies could play on this and be fine. But if you're a professional athlete with cleats, and you couldn't play on that field. It wasn't going to happen in those spots where it was a little too heavy with the paint. And I give David Baker a lot of credit, and he obviously got a chorus of boos when he first made the announcement from the crowd. One of the nicest men you'll find associated with professional football. and they just sort of had to take their lumps. But it was a bad situation, but I think you at least have to tip your cap to them for not making it worse.
Yeah, and the thought that occurred to me when we're flying home after the evening was, I remember, and partly because a lot of stuff with Brett Favre was on my mind, I remember in 2010, the Vikings had that Monday night game against the Bears had to be moved to TCF Bank Stadium because the Metrodome had collapsed and all that snow had crushed in the dome. TCF Bank did not have a heating system at that time. They put one in later when the Vikings moved there for these last couple of seasons. But there was an ice storm. That field was absolutely frozen solid. I don't think necessarily that field was safe to play on, and that was just 6 years ago.
Right.
And that's where I say, now I don't know if that game in 2010, if that situation happened today, if the game would have been canceled or postponed. But thinking back to that game in 2010, and I remember Favre taking a sack in that game, and his head slammed against that frozen turf, and he got a really, really bad concussion from that. I just think that game had come back to my mind, and I realized, you know, how far the league has come in a short time in terms of the player safety concerns.
Yeah, and you give them a lot of credit too in terms of it's probably a master's class in crisis communication in terms of what you have to do in that predicament. Mark Murphy said when we talked with him, 2 hours before the game is when he was basically informed that there could be a massive issue here.
Mm-hmm.
They did everything in their powers to try to get that game corrected. You saw them at the midfield with pressure hoses and everything trying to break up those patterns, and it just wasn't going to happen. But, yeah, they brought out, you know, instead they brought out the two teams. They had all the Pro Football Hall of Fame nominees say something. Lee Greenwood performed. So, I mean, they did the best they could with an unfortunate situation. How they proceed from here, we'll have to see. But, again, considering the issues a year ago when, you know, Sean Sweesum and the concerns there with what happened.
Yeah, his career ended, unfortunately.
Who knows what would have happened, you know, if you play that game. Unfortunately, this is what we're talking about instead of X player having an injury that might end up costing him in the long run.
Yeah, as far as the Packers are concerned, how much impact do you see missing this game having on training camp the rest of the preseason?
Zero.
I honestly agree. I don't think it's going to be much of a factor at all.
We talked about it. I mean, when we did our keys to the game, they win if nobody gets injured. Nobody got injured.
Right.
So you feel bad for Joe Callahan. I know he had a bunch of family there, and they were excited about it. You know, the undrafted free agents, the guys trying to make the roster, you're not going to get it back. But at the end of the day, you still have four preseason games. There's plenty of time to show what you can do.
I agree. There's still four games left. There's a lot of training camp left. It's one missed opportunity, but there's still plenty of opportunities left to go. So, and we'll talk about after the break the next opportunity coming up on Friday night against the Cleveland Browns in the preseason. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. So, Wes, the first preseason game now will be Friday night at Lambeau Field against the Cleveland Browns. What do you look for?
I'm looking forward to that playing surface. I think we can always, you know, count on the Lambeau Field. Everything that they do there is always top-notch. I'm kidding. A little bit of humor. Same thing, Spoff, is going back to the Canton game.
Yeah.
Really those young guys. Who really could separate themselves? This is where you find out who Sam Shields, you know, Jaron Elliott, Don Barclay. The list goes on and on of these guys who became key contributors out of those UFA spots,
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, trying to get that out. But, I mean, there's 15, 20 guys every year, these undrafted free agents. It's always interesting and fun to see who are the two, three guys that emerge and become really big contributors and guys that help this team win.
Yeah, and it seems that always, whether there are a few roster spots open seemingly or a whole bunch of roster spots open, those two or three guys that emerge always seem to end up on the 53. There's always an undrafted guy or two that make it because they start to make some plays in the preseason games. It carries through the rest of training camp. Everybody kind of follows their progress.
Right.
And lo and behold, they end up making it. Plus, you have the competition for the spots on the practice squad, those 10 spots, which are not taken lightly around here.
No, I mean, those guys are almost as important. As much as we kind of focus on who and how many undrafted free agents make the roster every year, a lot of times it comes down to who's on that roster at the end of the season. And
yeah,
it's going to be difficult to get through the course of an entire year without having to make some kind of adjustments to your roster. And when the Packers have to make a move, whether it be for injury or a different reason, they always look to promote from within. They like to use those guys that they've developed for the last 2, 3, 4, 5 months. And, you know, they have that foundation in the offense or defense to throw them right in. And Jared Aberderis actually still looking to make the roster for the first time coming out of the summer, but was playing almost every snap in that Arizona playoff game. They're so important to have those guys and where they might be able to fit in through the course of the season. And that's one reason I don't think you can really overlook it.
Yeah, for sure. And another thing we'll be looking for on Friday night against the Browns, the NFL debuts of the draft class, particularly the draft picks on the defensive side of the ball that appear are going to be needed to play and get significant playing time right away, talking about Blake Martinez at inside linebacker and Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry on the defensive line. The Packers are going to need these guys to be ready right from the get-go.
No question, and I think we've talked about this too. One of my most exciting things I thought for the first preseason game was seeing Kenny Clark get on the field, because he's looked so good in practice so far.
Yeah, for sure.
Looks really strong at the point of attack. I've really been impressed with how violent and physical he is with his hands. And he just looks at 20 years old like a guy who could step in and contribute right away, much like B.J. Raji did in 2009. Two different players, but I'm excited to see what he can do on the field. And even a guy like Dean Lowry, who gives you a little bit different body type too at that position.
Yeah, for sure. The way this defense will come together now with the new blood mixed in with some of the veterans, that's really a story to watch over the next month. So we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.